What? I know you suspect me. Well, I did it. So go ahead, turn me in. Stars. That was you? Yes, obviously. Who else would it be? The thing had a bad starter, and I'd called in a guild mechanic. I figured he'd come and worked on it for some reason. At the base? I don't know. The bureaucracy in those places is incredible. When I called to complain, they made excuses, so I figured... He put his hand to his head. Why in the world would you rip out my power matrix? I needed to destroy your morale. I winced at the bad lie. By leaving you powerless and impotent. Yeah, a symbol of my complete and total undermining of your authority. A defiant emblem. I carried it off, like an ancient barbarian warlord who would steal the heart of... Wasn't that a lot of work? Couldn't you have just discharged the acclivity ring like a normal human being? I don't know how to do that. Never mind. You can make it up to me later, by maybe not insulting me in front of the rest of the flight, for one day, at least. I stood there, processing. He seemed to actually not want a fight. Huh. Look, Jerkface said, glancing at the black car. I know something of what it's like to live in your parents' shadow, all right? I'm sorry. I won't do what I did again. But no more punching me, okay?
Okay.
He nodded to me and jogged off, apologizing to the Admiral as he climbed into the car. Next time I'll kick instead, I called after him. Ha! But of course he couldn't hear. I watched them drive off, then shook my head and picked up my pack. I didn't understand Jorgen at all. I was still in the DDF somehow, and he... Jorgen didn't want revenge. He didn't want to fight me. Though once I might have laughed at that, strangely I found the way he'd acted to be noble. He put the flight first. Set your sights on something higher. I lifted the radio to my head as I walked out of the base, a mess of conflicting emotions, but mostly relieved. Embot, play that song fragment for me a few times more. Please? Chapter 25. I settled into my Poco, wearing my pressure suit and helmet, my first time in a real cockpit since Bim and Morningtide had died. That immediately made something inside me hurt. Would it be like this every time from now on? Would I always have this quiet worry at the back of my mind? The one that whispered, which of your friends won't make it home from this mission? Today was supposed to be something more routine, though, not a battle. I powered on the Poco and felt that wonderful hum, the one the simulation couldn't imitate. I gripped the control sphere in my right hand, the throttle in my left, then lifted off and climbed into the sky alongside the other six fighters. Jorgen counted us off with confirmations, then called Cobb.
Skyward flight ready. Orders, sir? Go to 304.16-1240-25,000, Cobb said. Flight, set coordinates, Jorgen said. I'll take point. In case of a Krell ambush, I'll fall back with Arturo and FM. Ned, you're with Quirk in the middle formation. Spin and hurl. I want you in the rear, prepared to spray covering fire. There won't be an ambush, cadet, Cobb said, sounding amused. Just get to the indicated location.
We flew, and stars, it felt good. The ship trembled as it moved, responding to my commands. Wind currents were so much more alive than the simulation made them seem. I wanted to swoop back and forth, fly low and skim the crater-marked surface, then soar up high and buzz the debris field at the very edges of space. I kept myself under control. I could do that. Eventually, we approached a large group of fighters flying way up higher. There were a good five flights up there.
Nearing coordinates, Jorgen said to Cobb. What's going on? A training exercise? For you, yes, Cobb said.
Overhead, a few streaks of light marked smaller bits of debris breaking into the atmosphere. I watched, concerned.
Hey, know-it-all, Cobb said.
Yes, sir,
Arturo answered immediately.
What causes debris falls?
Cobb asked.
Various things, Arturo said. There are a lot of ancient mechanisms up there, and though many still work, their power matrices are slowly running out, so their orbits decay and they fall. Other times collisions happen.
Right, Cobb said. Well, that's what we're facing here. There was some kind of collision between two enormous chunks of metal above, and that's making some debris lose its orbit. We can expect a Krell incursion, and those fighters are here to watch. But you're here for another reason. A little target practice.
On what, sir?
Several large chunks of debris dropped out of the sky, burning past the flights above us. The debris, I guessed.
I want you flying in pairs, Cobb said. You're going to practice formations and do careful runs. Pick a larger piece of debris, follow it for a few seconds, then tag it for salvage to investigate. Your destructors have been outfitted to fire beacons if you pull the rate control dial out until it clicks.
That's it,
Hurl said.
Tagging pieces of space junk? Space junk can't dodge, Cobb said. Doesn't have shields, and accelerates predictably. I figure that's right about your skill level. Besides, you'll often be ordered to tag salvage during debris falls while waiting to see if the Krell attack. It's good practice, so don't complain or I'll stuff you back in the simulations for another month.
We're ready and willing, sir, Jorgen said, Hurl included. Thank you for this opportunity. Hurl made a few gagging noises into a private line to FM and Kimmelin. The lights on the console under the ship numbers showed me who was listening, and she didn't leave me off, which seemed like maybe a step forward. Jorgen arranged us into pairs and set us to work. When larger chunks of debris fell from the sky, we'd swoop down behind them and match speed, like we'd been taught, before shooting a radio beacon into them. The most useful debris were the ones that glowed blue with acclivity stone. We could salvage that to make ships. I let myself enjoy the work. It wasn't actual fighting, but the feel of the dive, the thrill of targeting and firing. I could imagine the chunks of space debris as Krell ships.
Are you ignoring me again?
Embot asked in my ear.
I think you're ignoring me again.
How can I ignore you? I said with a grunt, tagging another chunk of debris. If I don't know you're listening.
I'm always listening.
Don't you think that's a little creepy?
Nope. What are you doing?
I pulled out of my dive, with Hurl on my wing, and settled back into formation to wait for my next turn. I'm shooting space junk.
What did it do to you?
Nothing. It's just practice.
But it can't even shoot back.
Embot, it's space junk.
As if that were an excuse.
It actually is, I said. It's a really good excuse. Kimmelin took a run, Arturo at her wing. She did pretty well, for her, though Jorgen still found reason to nitpick.
Pull in tighter, he told her as she swooped down. Now don't ride it too close. If you were using real destructors to shoot it, chunks might fly back and hit you. Make sure you don't squeeze too hard when you fire.
Not to complain, she said, sounding tense, but I do believe I should focus right now.
Sorry, Jorgen snapped. I'll try to be less helpful in the future.
Dear, I think you'll find that difficult.
She tagged the chunk of debris, then sighed in relief.
Nice work, Quirk, Jorgen said. Netter, you take next run with FM on wing.
Kimmelin fell into line, as up above, several chunks of space debris fell at once. The regular fighters moved out of the way, letting them pass. We were flying relatively high, to give us time for good dives, so the ground was far below. Though we were still very far from the rubble belt itself, the lowest layers of which flew 300 kilometers above the surface of the planet. Ned picked one of the chunks and fell in behind it, ignoring the other three. So Kimmelin charged her destructors for long range and then sniped all three pieces, tagging one right after another, without missing a single time.
Stop showing off, Quirk, Cobb said.
Sorry, sir.
I frowned. Then called Cobb in private. Cobb, do you ever wonder if we're doing this wrong?
Of course you're doing it wrong. You're cadets.
No, I said. I mean, how could I explain? Quirk, she's a really good shot. Isn't there a better way to use her? She feels like a failure in most of our exercises because she's the worst pilot. Maybe she could just snipe for us.
And how long do you think she'd sit out there popping off Krell before they swarmed her? Remember, if they decide any one pilot is too dangerous, they focus on that person.
Maybe we could use that. You said that any time you can anticipate an enemy, that's an advantage, right? He grunted.
Leave the tactics to the Admiral's spin.
He turned off the line as Ned successfully tagged the debris.
Good night, sweet prince,
M'Bot whispered as the junk crashed to the ground.
Or princess, or, most likely, genderless piece of inanimate space junk.
I looked up above, watching for more debris. Pearl would be on the next run, and I'd be her wing. Some junk was definitely moving up there. Several pieces of it, swarming down. Not junk. Krell. I bolted upright, hand going tense on my control sphere. Multiple flights of the enemy emerged from the rubble belt, and the full pilots moved to engage them.
Fly down to 20,000 feet, cadets,
Cobb said.
You'll be here as reserves, but those pilots should be able to handle this. Looks like only about 30 enemy ships.
I settled back, but couldn't relax as explosions began to light the sky. Soon, the debris falling around us wasn't solely from the rubble belt. Cobb called for Hurl to do her run. Apparently, we were going to continue despite the fighting, which was probably good training, as I thought about it. Hurl performed an excellent maneuver, with a precise set of shots at the end. Nice, I told her as we fell into line. I didn't get a reply, of course.
Alas, poor space junk, M'Bot said. I would have pretended to know you if I were capable of lying.
Can't you do anything useful?
This isn't useful.
What about those Krell up there? I asked him. Can't you, I don't know, tell me about their ships or something?
At this range, I have access only to general scanners, he said. They're merely little blips to me, no specifics.
You can't watch in more detail, I asked. Cobb and the admirals have some kind of hologram that replicates the battlefield, so they're using scanners or something to construct what's going on.
That's ridiculous,
M'Bot said.
I'd have noticed a video feed, unless it was a localized short-range beacon created by echolocation devices in the various ships that— Oh!
A flaming starship, one of ours, came down in a death spiral, and though Arturo tried to get in close and spear it with his light lance to help, the ship was too far out. The pilot didn't eject. They tried until the last moment to pull up, rescue their ship. I steeled myself, looking back up at the battlefield.
Oh,
M'Bot said. Well, I asked.
I found the video feed, he said. You're all so slow. You really fly like that? How can you stand it?
Moving faster would either break our ships or crush those of us inside with G-forces.
Ah, yes. Human squishiness quotient. Is that why you're so mad at that space junk? Jealousy is not pretty, Spencer.
Weren't you going to do something useful?
Computing enemy attack patterns, M'Bot said. It will take me a few minutes to finish running simulations and analyzing predictive data.
He paused.
Huh. I didn't know I could do those things. Is it my turn?
Arturo asked over the general line, and I jumped. I kept expecting them to hear M'Bot talking to me, though the AI said he was sending his own feed directly into my helmet, then intercepting my outward feed to edit away any sign of his voice or my responses to him. Somehow he did all of this in the blink of an eye, before my signals reached the rest of my flight.
Hold a moment, Cobb said. Something is odd about this attack. Can't put my finger on it.
A large shadow shifted overhead. Enormous. It was so big, my mind reeled to comprehend it. It was like the sky itself was falling. A sudden shower of hundreds of pieces of debris rained down, a blazing hail. and behind it, that something. That enormous, inconceivable something.
Pull back, Cobb said. Flight leader, scramble your ships and get them back to...
In a sudden burst of motion, the battle above us became the battle around us as ships from both sides dodged downward. Krell ships and human ships scattered in front of the enormous thing that was falling from above. A dark, metallic cube the size of a mountain. A ship? What ship could be that size? It was vaster than a city. Had even the flagship of our fleet been that big? I had always imagined it as a slightly larger troop transport. The fighters kept shooting at one another as they lowered their altitude. Our little flight was suddenly in the center of a firestorm of destructor blasts and falling chunks of burning metal.
Out, Jorgen said. Accelerate to Mag 5 and follow my lead. Local heading 132, away from those dogfighters behind us.
I engaged my booster, zipping forward, hurl on my wing.
That's a ship, Arturo said. Look how slowly it's falling. Those are functioning acclivity rings across the bottom, hundreds of them.
A shadow blanketed the land. I leaned into my throttle, speeding up to Mag 5, well above normal dogfighting speeds. Any faster, and we wouldn't be able to respond to our surroundings. Indeed, as a fighter-sized chunk of debris fell near us, we barely had time to react. Half of our flight dodged left, the other half right. I went left with Kimmelin and Ned, slowing for more maneuverability. Destructor blasts sprayed in front of me as two of our starfighters barreled past, followed by six Krell ships. I cursed and dodged around them, followed by a whimpering Kimmelin who took my wing position.
Analysis complete, Embot said. Oh, wow, you're busy.
I dove, but we had picked up a tail. The Krell ships sprayed blasts around me. I cursed, then pulled back.
Go ahead of me, Quirk.
She sped past and I broke right, getting the Krell ship to focus on me, the closer target.
You really should have waited for my computations before beginning, Embot noted. Impatience is a serious character flaw.
I gritted my teeth, spinning through a sequence of dodges.
Spin, Quirk, Netter, Jorgen said on the line. Where are you? Why didn't you follow my...
I'm taking fire, jerkface, I snapped.
I'm on you, Spin, Ned said in my ear. If you can level out, I'll try and shoot him down.
You won't get through the shield. Quirk, you still there?
At your three,
she said, voice trembling.
Be ready to pick this guy off.
Oh, okay, okay.
The enormous falling vessel loomed overhead. Arturo had been right. Its descent was slow, steady. But it was old and broken, with gaping holes in it. The battlefield continued in a wide, shadowed section of open air underneath it, filled with dogfighting ships and lines of destructor fire. My tail got a shot on me, and my shield crackled. Focus. I'd practiced this 100 times in simulation. I pulled up into a loop, my tail following. At the top of the curve, I performed a starfighter maneuver. Ignoring air resistance, I turned my ship on its axis and slammed on my overburn, darting out of the loop to the side. My grav caps flared, buffering most of the G-forces, but my stomach still practically climbed up my throat. The simulations did not do justice to exactly how disorienting this was, particularly when the grav caps cut out and I got slammed back into my seat. I was supposed to be able to handle that kind of force, and I didn't black out, so technically I did handle it. But I nearly threw up. My proximity alarm went off. The Krell ship, as hoped, hadn't compensated fast enough. It had continued the loop, and I shot out of my maneuver right past it. I fought through the nausea and slammed the IMP, taking down my shield and that of my tail. I braced myself. I was completely open. If that Krell got turned toward me and fired off a single shot, a flash came behind me, and a shockwave washed across my ship.
I got him, Kimmelin said. I did it.
Thanks, I said, exhaling in relief, letting off my overburners. I continued in a straight line, starting to slow as I turned off my booster and primed my shield igniter. My helmet felt hot and sweaty against my head as my fingers moved through the familiar motions. Thank the stars for Cobb's training. My body knew what to do. A Krell ship came in, spotting me coasting on my momentum. I cringed, but a spray of weapons fire sent the ship scattering away.
I've got you, Ned said, zipping overhead. Quirk, join me in a defensive pattern.
Gotcha, Kimmelin said.
No need, I said, slamming the igniter. I'm back up. Shall we get out of here?
Gladly,
Kimmelin said. I led the other two in a course that I hoped would get us out, then called Jorgen.
We're at heading 304.8, I told him. Did the rest of you get out from underneath this thing?
Affirmative,
Jorgen said.
We passed out of the shadow at 303.97-1210.3-21200. We'll wait for you here, Spin.
He sounded calm, which was honestly more than I could say for myself. I couldn't help imagining more empty seats in our classroom.
Are you ready for my analysis?
Mbot said. That depends on how often it will mention mushrooms.
Only once, I'm afraid. The thing you see looming overhead is around half of a C-137-KJM orbital shipyard with added Delver training facility. I don't know exactly what that is, but I believe it must have been from manufacturing starships. There's no sign of the other half, but this chunk has probably been floating up there for centuries, judging by the low power output of those acclivity rings. My projections indicate its orbit has decayed now that it doesn't have enough power for self-correction. It doesn't seem to have an AI, or if it does have one, it refuses to talk to me, which is rude. The Krell attack patterns indicate a defensive goal intended to keep you away from the station.
Really? I asked. Repeat that last part.
Hmm? Oh, it's obvious from their flight patterns. They aren't worried about actually killing you or getting to your base or anything. Today, they just want to keep you away from this ship, likely because of the fantastic salvage it would provide for your backward, fleshy society of slow ship flyers.
That made sense. They sometimes shot down debris to keep us from getting acclivity rings. How worried must they be about us capturing this thing with hundreds of them?
Also, it looks a little like a mushroom,
Mbot added. Another pair of DDF fighters, perhaps the same ones we'd seen before, bolted past, tailed by a large group of Krell.
Hey, Ned said. Spin and Quirk. You two get out. You're almost there. I need to do something.
What? I said, turning to look over my shoulder.
Netter?
He broke off from our flight pattern, giving chase to the Krell ships that had passed us. What did he think he was doing? I turned and followed.
Netter? Scud!
Spin? Kimmelin said. We're not leaving him. Come on. We raced after Ned, who was tailing the six Krell ships. They, in turn, were flying after two Saigo-class fighters painted blue, indicating they were from Nightstorm flight. Ned clearly intended to help. But one cadet against six Krell?
Ned, I said, I'm all for fighting, you know that, but we also need to follow orders.
He didn't respond. Ahead, the two Nightstorms, overwhelmed by the enemy fire, did something desperate. They flew up close to the large shipyard, then curved around and flew into a hole in its side. A gaping blackness, perhaps where another section of the shipyard had once been attached. The whole structure was still falling, but very slowly. Eventually, it would crash down, and I doubted we wanted to be anywhere nearby when it did. I watched as the Krell ships pursued our pilots into the depths of the ancient ship, and Ned barreled after them. So I gritted my teeth and followed.
Spin, Kimmelin said. I don't think I can do that. If I try to fly in there, I swear I'll crash.
Yeah, okay. I said, go join Jorgen and the others.
All right, she said.
She zipped off to the left, flying out from underneath the shadow of the falling machine. I, instead, dove into the breach, chasing into the darkness after Ned. Chapter 26. I hurtled through the innards of the ancient station, a large open blackness rimmed by cranes and other construction equipment, lit by flickering emergency floodlights. The writing on one wall, in a circular pattern, reminded me of some of the old equipment down in the caverns, like the strange room I had often passed where the ceiling and floor had been covered in this writing. I could only assume the old occupants of this planet had constructed ships in here. But why had they needed so much space? Our starfighters were swallowed by the cavernous chamber. The two DDF fighters soared upward, chased by the six Krell, who fired liberally, spraying destructor blasts through the darkness. Ned tried to catch up, and I tailed him, hitting my overburn for a moment of extra acceleration. I couldn't call the other fighters. Cadet ships weren't normally equipped with radio channels to call full pilots. They didn't want us interfering. I switched to Ned's direct channel. "This is insane," I said. "Thank you so much for giving me an excuse to try it."
"Spin?" he said. "You're still with me?"
"So far. What's the plan?"
"Help those fighters somehow. Maybe we can get close. Those Krell are flying in a..."
He cut off as he buzzed past an old crane, nearly clipping it.
"They're flying in a group. We could hit them all at once with a well-placed IMP.
"I'll follow your lead," I said, dodging underneath the crane. "But if Jerkface asks, I'm totally going to claim I tried to talk you out of this."
"You, as the voice of reason? Spin, I'm an idiot, and even I wouldn't believe that."
I grinned, then joined Ned in accelerating to Mag 1.2, trying to catch up to the Krell. Unfortunately, the DDF pilots broke to the right, straight into a tunnel leading farther into the depths of the old station. A part of me couldn't believe we were doing this. Flying through the center of an ancient piece of debris, while it was in the middle of plummeting toward the ground? How long did we have until the thing crashed? Minutes at most? I gritted my teeth, letting up on the throttle as Ned and I banked, then chased the Krell into the tunnel. Red lights lined the tunnel, and they flashed in a blur as we zipped through at Mag 1.2, already a dangerous speed for what amounted to indoors. I didn't dare go faster, but a quick glance at my proximity sensor indicated the Krell were still well outside IMP range. Ned unloaded with his destructor, and I followed his lead. But as Cobb had warned, aiming was difficult, even with six targets swarming in front of us. The Krell shields easily absorbed the few shots that connected. Far ahead, our fellow pilots speared the wall with light lances and cornered into another tunnel. The Krell followed, less adroit. I speared the wall with my own lance, then pulled myself into a tight curve to follow. My grav caps flashed, absorbing the G-forces and keeping me from getting flattened. I gave them a workout as we wound through the innards of the ship, taking turn after turn. Moving through such a frantic, tight sequence, I didn't fire a single shot. My attention was totally consumed by watching the Krell thrusters, using their motions as a guidepost for where to place my next light lance. Turn, release, dodge, lance, turn, repeat.
"Just a little closer," Ned said from right ahead of me.
"Lance, turn, release."
"I've got an updated battle projection," M-Bot said happily.
Ahead, a Krell ship missed its turn, clipping the side of the tunnel wall. The shield absorbed the impact, but the rebound sent the ship slamming into the opposite wall. The sudden, violent explosion made me back off on my speed. I made my turn, barely, debris and sparks crackling off my ship's shield.
"You forgot I was here, didn't you?"
M-Bot said. "Busy," I said through gritted teeth. Ned hadn't slowed at the explosion. In fact, he was overburning, closing in on Mag 1.5, trying to get closer to the remaining Krell. I sped up to keep pace with him, but this was starting to feel like too much, even for me.
"I could just go back into hibernation, if you're not interested in talking,"
M-Bot noted.
"You'd, miss me, if I did that, right?"
"Sure."
"Ah, you humans are so sentimental. Ha ha ha."
By the way, you have precisely 3.5 minutes until this station hits the surface. Maybe less than that, as the Krell have begun firing upon it.
What?
Now that the bulk of your ships have retreated, the Krell are focusing on the station, trying to keep it out of your hands. I believe some bombers are preparing explosive charges on the top, and ordinary fighters outside are destroying all the acclivity rings to drop it faster.
Scud. We could probably build several flights worth of ships with the salvage from this place.
The Krell weren't going to let that happen.
But why allow this thing to fall in the first place? Why not destroy it up above?
Trying to figure out Krell motivations now was a waste of time. I pulled into another turn after Ned. I could barely make out the enemy. They were losing us. Far ahead, the bright orange flash of an explosion lit the tunnels. One of the ships we were trying to protect had just been destroyed.
Ned, I shouted into the comm. This place is coming down. We have to get out.
No, I have to help.
I took aim, then, gritting my teeth, risked spearing him with my light lance. The glowing red line of light stuck to him and made his shield crackle. I cut my booster, then spun my ship on its acclivity ring and boosted the other direction, pulling him backward, slowing his ship.
Let go of me,
he shouted. Ned, we can't help. We're not good enough for this sort of thing yet. Stars above, it's a wonder we survived that run through the tunnels.
But...
We hovered there, burners pulling us opposite directions, connected by a cord of light.
Coward,
he whispered. The word hit me like a slap to the face. I wasn't. I couldn't be. Coward.
I'm cutting my booster, he said. Step yours down, or we'll end up careening into that wall.
I bit off a response to him, then lowered my thrust before cutting the light lance. We fell still, but somewhere distant, the entire structure groaned and shook.
Which way?
He asked.
Where do we go?
I don't know. Embot made a throat-clearing noise.
Would you like instructions on how to escape the flaming death trap that you've inconveniently found yourself-
Yes, I snapped.
No need to get prickly. Fly ahead until I tell you, then take a left.
Follow me, I said to Ned, slamming the throttle forward and leaping into motion. I tore through the tunnels, the flare of my booster reflecting off the abandoned metal walls. Ned followed.
Left. Down that tunnel just ahead,
Embot noted.
Great. Now go 2 tunnels. No, not that one. There. Take that one.
I used my light lance to turn sharply into the tunnel.
You have slightly under 2 minutes until you die a fiery death, and I'm left with only Rig and the Slug. I haven't been able to compute which of those two is the less engaging conversationalist. Take that tunnel above you.
I followed his instructions, curving through the maddening complex of turns and tunnels. The sounds outside grew louder. Wrenching steel, shaking, hollow explosions. Sweat soaked the sides of my helmet. I gave my entire attention to the flying, absorbed, dedicated, focused. Though I never lost control of my flying, a part of me started to feel disconnected. The insides of my helmet began to grow hot, and I could swear that I could hear voices inside my head. Just fragments of words. Detonate. Turn. Booster. Ned and I burst back into that cavernous opening at the outer rim of the shipyard. My focus faded into relief, and I didn't need Embot's instructions to turn straight for the glowing gap in the wall. Ned and I darted out of the hole and nearly plowed right into the ground. The shipyard had almost hit the surface. I pulled up and skimmed the blue-gray surface, kicking up dust behind me. Ned cursed softly. We'd entered a narrow, shrinking gap of space between station and ground.
The Krell have just detonated several large explosives on the top of the shipyard,
Embot said. I bolted forward under the shipyard. The steel ceiling overhead lowered, chunks of metal breaking off and warping around us as the thing's structural integrity collapsed.
At current velocity, you will not escape the blast wave,
Embot said softly.
Overburn, Ned, I shouted, slamming my throttle all the way forward. Mag 10!
The grav caps kicked in, but quickly overloaded, and a moment later I was smashed backward in my seat. My face grew heavy, the skin pulling back from my eyes and around my mouth. My arms felt leaden and tried to slip away from the controls. Ahead, the way out, freedom, was an ever-shrinking line of light. My Poco started to rattle as I hit Mag 10, then continued, pushing to Mag 10.5. The vibration got worse, and my shield grew bright from the sudden heat of wind resistance. Blessedly, it was enough. Ned and I exploded out from underneath the shipyard as it crashed down, spraying dust and debris after us. But at these speeds, we quickly outran that, and outran the sound of the crash, since we were going several times the speed of sound. I breathed out, decelerating carefully, the rattling subsiding. Ned on my wing, we swooped around. And in those seconds of flight after escaping, we'd gotten far enough away that I couldn't even see the dust of the crashing shipyard. My sensors barely registered the shockwave when it finally hit us on our way to rendezvous with the others. Eventually, we did get close enough that I could make out the enormous dust cloud the crash had caused. The wreckage itself was just a big dark shadow in the dust, swarming with smaller specks above. Krell ships, making sure nothing useful could be salvaged from the enormous wreck. Acclivity stone could often be recovered from the core of fallen debris, but concentrated destructor fire, or the intense heat from the right kind of an explosion, would ruin it.
Finally, Jorgen said as we fell in with the flight, what in the stars were you two thinking?
I didn't respond, instead doing a count of our team. 7 ships, including mine. We'd all made it. We were sweaty, rattled, and solemn. Almost nobody said anything as we met up with Riptide Flight for the return to base. But we were alive. Coward. Ned's voice echoed inside my brain, more distracting than the heat from the sensors in my helmet, or the surreal place my thoughts had gone as we flew out. Had I really thought I'd heard voices? I wasn't a coward. Sometimes you had to retreat. The entire DDF had pulled back from this fight. I wasn't less of a soldier because I had convinced Ned to escape. Right? It was growing dark by the time we landed at the launch pad. I stripped off my helmet and climbed from the cockpit, exhausted. Jorgen met me at the bottom of the ladder.
You still haven't answered me, he snapped. I left you alone during the flight back, as I'm sure you're rattled. But you are going to explain yourself.
He grabbed me by the arm and held onto it tightly.
You nearly got Ned killed with that stunt.
I sighed, then looked at his hand. He carefully let go.
The question remains, he said. That was crazy, even for you. I can't believe you'd-
As much as I like being the crazy one, Jerkface, I'm too tired to listen to you right now. I nodded toward Ned's ship in the dim light. He flew in, I followed.
You'd rather I let him go alone? Ned?
Jorgen said.
He's too level-headed for something like that.
Maybe the rest of us are getting to him. All I know is there were a couple of Saigos from Nightstorm Flight who picked up some enemy tails, and Ned would not let go.
Nightstorm Flight?
Jorgen asked. Yeah, why? Jorgen fell silent, then turned and walked toward Ned's ship. I followed, feeling wrung out, my head starting to ache in a strange way, like needles behind my eyes. Ned's ship was empty, and he wasn't with the others, who were gathering at the rooms near the launch pad to change out of their pressure suits. They were laughing together now that the stress of the battle had faded. Jorgen took off down the path between launch pads, and I followed, confused, until we reached a line of 7 Saigo-class starfighters branded with the Nightstorm Flight logo. They'd gotten back before us, and their pilots had already gone, leaving the ships to the maintenance crews. Ned knelt on the pavement near 2 empty spots in the line of ships. What? I asked Jorgen.
His brothers, Spin. They're wingmates. Nightstorm 6 and 7.
the pilots we'd been following. The ones who, it now became obvious, had both died in those dark tunnels. Chapter 27. Ned didn't come to class the next day, or the day after that, or all that week. Cobb kept us busy running chase exercises. We swooped, dodged, and tagged one another, like real pilots. But in the moments between the action, Ned's voice haunted me. Coward. I thought about it again as I sat in my classroom mockpit, running through exercises. I'd broken off the chase and had forced Ned to abandon his brothers. Was that something any hero of legend would ever have done?
Statistical projections indicate that if you'd remained in your pursuit for another 7 seconds,
Embot said as I ran through a holographic dogfighting exercise,
you'd have died in the crashdown or subsequent explosion.
Could you have broken into the radio channel? I said to him, whispering because we were in the classroom, and called Ned's brothers.
Yes, I probably could have.
We should have thought of that. Maybe if we'd coordinated, we could have helped them escape.
And how would you have explained your sudden ability to hack DDF communications signals?
I dove in my chase of the holographic Krell and didn't reply. If I'd been a true patriot, I'd have long ago turned the ship over to my superiors. But I wasn't a patriot. The DDF had betrayed and killed my father, then lied about it. I hated them for that. But hate them or not, I'd still come begging to them to let me fly. Suddenly, that seemed to be another act of cowardice. I growled softly, using my light lance to spin around a chunk of hovering debris, then slamming my overburn. I darted past the Krell ship and hit my IMP, killing both of our shields, then rotated on my axis. That pointed my nose backward while I was still flying forward, but I managed to spray destructors at the Krell behind me, destroying it. That was a dangerous maneuver on my part, as it oriented me the wrong way for watching where I was going. Indeed, another Krell ship immediately swooped in on my right flank and fired on me. I died, with my shield-down klaxon blaring in my ear.
Pretty stunt, Cobb said in my ear as my hologram reset. Great way to die.
I unbuckled and stood up, tearing off my helmet and tossing it aside. It bounced off my seat and clattered against the floor as I walked to the back of the room and started to pace. Cobb stood in the center of a circle of imitation cockpits, little holographic ships spinning around him. He wore an earpiece to speak with us over our helmet lines. He eyed me as I paced, but he let me be.
Scud! Quirk! He yelled at Kimmelin instead. That fighter was obviously going through an S4 sequence, trying to bait you. Pay attention, girl.
Sorry, she exclaimed from inside her cockpit. Oh, and sorry about that, too.
Sir? Arturo asked, shrouded in his training hologram.
The Krell do that a lot, don't they? Lead us along? Hard to say, Cobb said with a grunt.
I continued to pace, working out my frustration, mostly at myself, as I listened. Though they were seated in the circle, their voices were muffled by their helmets and the mockpit enclosures. Hearing it all reassured me that when I whispered to Embot in my mockpit, the others wouldn't overhear, so long as I remembered to be very soft. Their flight chit-chat was calming to me. I slowly stopped my pacing, stepping up to join Cobb near the central hologram.
The other day, Arturo continued, with that big chunk of space debris. Their attack wasn't to defeat us, but to destroy it, and presumably keep us from salvaging it, right? Yes, Cobb said. What's your point, Amphi?
Just that, sir, they must have known it was going to fall. They live out there, in space, and so they probably saw that chunk up there all those years. They could have destroyed it at any time. But they waited until it fell. Why?
I nodded. I'd wondered the very same thing.
Krell motives are unknowable, Cobb said. Other than their desire to exterminate us, of course.
Why have they never attacked with more than 100 ships at once? Arturo continued. Why do they continue to bait us into skirmishes instead of sending in one overwhelming attack?
Why do they let salvage fall in the first place? I added. Without it, we wouldn't be able to get enough acclivity rings to keep up a resistance. Why don't we attack them in the rubble belt? Why wait for them to come down here and...
Enough training,
Cobb said, walking over to his desk and hitting the button that disengaged all of the holograms.
Sorry, sir, I said. Don't apologize, cadet, Cobb said. You either, Amphisbina. You both ask good questions. Everyone, helmets off. Sit up. Pay attention. Considering how long it's been, we've learned frighteningly little about the Krell. But I'll tell you what we do know.
I felt myself growing eager as the others removed their helmets. Answers? Finally?
Sir, Jorgen said, standing up. Aren't Krell details classified, only available to full pilots?
Arturo groaned softly and rolled his eyes. His expression seemed to read, Thank you, Jorgen, for never being any fun whatsoever.
Nobody likes a tattler, Jorgen, Cobb said. Shut up and listen. You need to know this. You deserve to know this. Being a first citizen gives me some leeway on what I can say.
I stepped back beside my mockpit as Cobb called up something with his hologram. A planet. Detritus? It did have chunks of metal floating around it, but the rubble belt extended farther and was thicker than I'd expected.
This, he said, is an approximation of our planet and the rubble belt. Truth is, we have only a rough idea what's up there. We lost a lot of whatever we did know when the Krell bombed the archive and our command staff back in LD-0. But some of our scientists think that at one time, a shell surrounded the entire planet, like a metal shield. Problem is, a lot of those old mechanisms up there are still active, and they have guns.
He watched the holographic planet, which glowed softly blue and was transparent, launch a group of holographic fighters. They got close to the rubble belt and were shot down by hundreds of destructors.
It's dangerous up there, Cobb continued, even for the Krell. That's why the old fleet came here, to this old graveyard of a planet. What little the old people remember indicates that Detritus was known but avoided back in the day. Its shielding severely interfered with communications. And when facing the old orbital defense platforms, our fleet barely made it through to crash on the surface. The Krell don't seem to explore much out there. They might have known that old shipyard was going to fall, but getting to it through the rubble belt would have been costly. They seem to have found a few safe pathways to the planet, and they use those almost exclusively.
So, I said, fascinated. This was all new to me. Could we use those old defense platforms somehow?
We've tried, Cobb said. But it's dangerous for us to fly up there as well. The platforms will fire on us, too. Also, the Krell are more deadly up in space. Remember the way this planet is shielded? Well, the Krell have strange advanced communications abilities. The planet's shielding interferes with their capacity to talk to each other. We think that's why they fly worse down here. There's another issue, smaller, Cobb said, seeming to grow hesitant about something. In space, beyond the planet, the Krell can... Well, the old crews say that Krell technology lets them read what humans are thinking, and that some people are more susceptible to this than others.
I shared looks with the rest of the flight. I'd never heard anything like that before.
Don't tell anyone I told you that part, though, Cobb said.
So, Arturo said, this communication interference and those orbital defenses are why the Krell don't bombard us from space?
In the early days of Alta, Cobb said, they tried to bring in some larger ships, but those got destroyed by orbital defenses. The Krell can only get small, maneuverable ships through to attack us.
That doesn't explain why they send relatively small flights, Arturo said.
Unless I'm wrong, they've never sent an assault larger than 100 ships, right?
Cobb nodded.
Why not send 200, 300?
We don't know. Dig into the classified reports and you'll find nothing more than wild theories. Perhaps 100 ships is the most they can coordinate at once.
Okay, Arturo said. But why do they seem to only be able to prepare a single lifebuster at a time? Why not load every ship with one and suicide them into us? Why? What are they? I interrupted.
Arturo had good questions, but in my opinion, less important than that. Arturo glanced at me, then nodded.
Do we know, Cobb? I asked.
In those secret files, does somebody know? Have we ever seen a Krell?
Cobb changed the hologram to a hovering image of a burned-out helmet and some pieces of armor.
I shivered. Krell remains. His hologram was a much more detailed, much more real version of the artistic renditions I'd seen. The photo showed a few scientists standing at a table around the armor, which was squat and bulky, kind of squarish.
This is all we've ever been able to recover, Cobb said. And we only find it in occasional ships we shoot down. 1 in 100 or fewer. They aren't human, of that we're sure.
He showed another image, a closer-up hologram of one of the helmets, burned out from a crash.
There are theories, Cobb continued. The old people, who lived on the Defiant itself, talk of things impossible to our current understanding. Maybe the reason we never find anything but armor is because there isn't anything else to find. Maybe the Krell are the armor. In the old days, there were legends of something strange. Machines that can think.
Machines that can think. Machines with advanced communications technology. I suddenly felt cold. The room seemed to fade, and I stood there beside my mock pit, hearing the others talk as if from far away.
That's crazy, Pearl said. A piece of metal can't think any more than a rock can, or that door, or my canteen.
More crazy than the idea that they can read minds? Arturo asked.
I've never heard anything like that.
There are obviously wonders in this galaxy that we can barely comprehend, Cobb said. After all, the Defiant and other ships could travel between stars in the blink of an eye. Thinking machines would explain why so many Krell cockpits we investigate are empty, and why the armor we recover never seems to have any bodies in it.
Machines that can think. Cobb called the end of the day then, and we all gathered our things to leave for dinner. Kimmelin and FM both complained that they had a cold. One had been going around. So Cobb suggested they go back to their room and rest. He said he'd have an aide send dinner to their bunks. I heard all of this, but didn't really. Instead, I sat down in a daze. Embot. A ship that could think, and could infiltrate our communications with apparent ease. What if I was repairing a Krell? Why hadn't I ever bothered to think about that? How could I be so blind to what seemed like an obvious possibility? He has a cockpit, I thought, with English writing, facilities for a pilot, and he says he can't fly the ship himself. But that could be a ruse, right? He said he couldn't lie, but I had only his word on that.
Spin?
Cobb asked, stopping near my mock pit.
You aren't catching that cold too, are you?
I shook my head. This is just a lot to take in. Cobb grunted.
Well, maybe it's a load of cold slag. Truth is, once we lost the archive, most everything about the old days became hearsay.
Do you mind if we tell Ned about this? I asked him. When he gets back?
He's not coming back, Cobb said. The Admiral officially removed him from the cadet roles this morning.
What? I said, standing up, surprised. Did he ask to be removed?
He didn't report for duty, Spin.
But his brothers...
Being unable to control your emotions, grief included, is a sign that one is unfit for duty.
At least that's how Ironsides and the other DDF brass see it. I say it's a good thing Ned is out. That boy was too smart for all this anyway.
He hobbled out the door. I sank back down into my seat. So we really were just six now. And if being unable to control emotions made one unfit for duty, what about me? It was all piling on top of me. The loss of friends, the worry about Embot, voices that whispered deep down inside that I was, in fact, a coward. All my life, I'd fought with a chip on my shoulder, thundering that I would be a pilot and I would be good enough. Where was that confidence now? I'd always assumed that when I made it, when I finally got here, I'd stop feeling so alone. I dug in my pack and raised my radio. Embot, are you there?
Acclivity ring. Functional, but lacking power. Boosters, non-functional. Cytonic hyperdrive, non-functional.
He paused.
That's a yes, in case you were confused. I'm here, because I can't go anywhere.
Were you listening in on our conversation?
Yes.
And?
And I admit, I was running some calculations on the likelihood of mushrooms growing inside that building, as your conversation was, typical of humans, slightly boring. But not completely. So you should feel...
Embot, are you a Krell?
What? No. Of course I'm not a Krell. Why would you think I am? How could you think... Wait. Calculating. You think because I'm an AI, and they're likely AIs, that we must be the same?
You have to admit it's suspicious.
I'd be offended if I could be offended, he said. Maybe I should start calling you a cow, since you have four limbs, are made of meat, and have rudimentary biological mental capacities.
Would you know if you were a Krell? I asked him. Maybe you forgot.
I'd know, he said.
You've forgotten why you came to Detritus, I pointed out. You have only one image of your pilot, if that's even really him. You can barely remember anything about my species. Maybe you never knew. Maybe your memory bank is filled only with bits that the Krell know about us, and you invented this entire story.
I'm writing a new subroutine now, he said, to properly express my outrage. It's going to take time to get right. Give me a few minutes.
Embot,
just a sec. Patience is a virtue, Spencer.
I sighed, but started packing up my things. I felt hollowed out, empty, not afraid, of course. I bathed in fires of destruction and reveled in the screams of the defeated. I didn't get afraid. But maybe, deep down, I was worried. Ned dropping out had hit me harder than it should have. I threw my pack on my shoulder and clipped the radio to its side. I set it to flash a light if Embot or someone else tried to contact me. I didn't want him talking out of it while I walked the hallways, though I needn't have worried. The building was empty. Cobb had dismissed us late, and the other flights had already gone to dinner. I didn't spot any MPs or random support staff as I walked slowly toward the exit, my feet leaden. I wasn't certain I could keep doing this. Getting up early, working all morning on Embot, getting wrung out by lessons each day, then trudging back to my cave at night. Sleeping fitfully, dreaming of the people I'd failed or, worse, having nightmares about running away.
Psst.
I stopped, then glanced at the radio strapped to the side of my backpack.
Psst. Spencer.
I looked up and down the hallway. To my right, was that Kimmel in there, in a doorway wearing black? Quirk? She waved me forward urgently. I frowned, suspicious. Then I wanted to kick myself. Idiot, this is Kimmelin. I walked to her. What are you-
Shh,
she said, then scrambled down the hallway and peeked around a corner. She waved at me to follow, and more confused than anything else, I did. This continued for a couple of turns through empty corridors. We even had to pull into the bathroom, and she made me wait with her there, explaining nothing, until we finally reached a hallway lined with doors. The girls' bunks. Two unfamiliar young women, wearing flight suits and a patch of Star Dragon flight, stood chatting outside one of the rooms. Kimmelin held me there, crouching at the corner until the two girls finally walked off in the other